Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Friday, April 5th, 2024, the 1,171st day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free a couple days later on a wide variety of podcast platforms and, of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/imyourmoderator. So yesterday we talked about one of the biggest and most dangerous conspiracy theories currently in existence, and that is the theory of devolution presented by my good friend John Harold, also known as Patel Patriot. And I talked about a few scenarios that are being reported right now. We are being told these things around the world are really happening in geopolitics that I believe suggest that the devolution theory or something like it must be true, and that the normie interpretation, accepting as default the official story within the central narrative given to us by the television, by the mainstream media, not only does a poorer job of mapping onto reality and inculcating a worldview that allows us to have some idea of where all of this is headed in the future, it actually asks us to accept as automatically true a number of claims from authority that are utterly preposterous, like the idea that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes, or the idea that lockdowns were going to slow the spread and that they were good policy, or masks or vaccines, etc. We've been lied to about so much. Just rampant, intentional, constant dishonesty on a massive scale for a variety of reasons, about a variety of subjects, and ultimately, the result is that a layer of false reality is projected above. It just sits on top of reality prime, the empirical observable reality that we experience and would be experiencing whether or not we had a phone in our hand or a television in our home or spent time reading newspapers. We have been convinced that we have to believe a certain type of information based on where it comes from in order to participate in a common reality with our peers who are accepting information from those sources. And because so many people accept information from that authoritative source as a default explanation for what's going on in the world, and because they require absolute hard evidence, irrefutable proof to even consider doubting that story, we end up in a situation where things that are almost certainly true are redefined as absolutely ridiculous and impossible, while being coerced to believe as true things that are actually ridiculous and impossible. And so today I want to talk about some new things that they are simply expecting us to believe. And let's start out with an easy one. This is CNN Today. CIA refutes whistleblower claim pushed by Republicans leading Biden impeachment inquiry. All right, so Republicans are running this impeachment inquiry. They have received whistleblower testimony suggesting that the CIA and the DOJ interfered with the investigation into Joe and Hunter Biden, and CNN wants us to know that the CIA says that didn't happen, therefore, that didn't happen. And you might think, CNN can't just be telling us that the CIA says so, and therefore this claim has been refuted, can they? I mean, they're the most trusted name in news. They are a major mainstream media outlet. They're supposed to have sources and quotes. They're supposed to give us the who, what, when, where, why, and how. They're not just supposed to take the word of the intelligence community for it, are they? House Republicans leading the impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden were dealt their latest blow this week when the CIA informed them that an allegation they pushed was false. The latest example of House Republicans citing questionable information to make a serious claim. Without evidence or the votes to impeach the president, at this point there is no clear consensus on how or even when to end the Republican-led impeachment inquiry. This latest development comes after the Department of Justice charged a once-trusted FBI informant with lying about the president and his son Hunter Biden's involvement in business dealings, undercutting a major aspect of the Republicans' impeachment inquiry into the president. You see that? They have successfully discredited, by charging with a crime, one of the people coming forward with evidence against Joe and Hunter Biden. Now, does the case rely on that one person or that one claim? No, it sure doesn't. It doesn't at all. But the most trusted name in news is more than happy to present it to you that way. Well, this one claim, this was the centerpiece of Joe Biden's history of corruption, this one claim, and now it's fallen apart. You see, the DOJ wouldn't have charged this man if he was telling the truth, just like they wouldn't have charged Donald Trump if he hadn't actually convinced all his supporters that the big lie was true and then convinced them to go insurrect the Capitol. The DOJ would never make a mistake like that, and they would never, ever carry out a political prosecution. Back to the article. House Oversight Chair James Comer and House Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan accused the CIA in a letter last month of intervening in the criminal investigation into Hunter Biden by preventing IRS and DOJ investigators from interviewing a witness in their probe based on information they say came from a whistleblower. But the CIA has refuted that claim in a letter obtained first by CNN that was sent to Jordan and Comer. Without confirming or denying the existence of any associations or communications, CIA did not prevent or seek to prevent IRS or DOJ from conducting any such interview. The allegation is false, CIA Director of Congressional Affairs James Cotella wrote to the Republican committee chairs. And thank goodness CNN was able to obtain that letter first. House Republicans are pushing back on the refutation. The allegation is not false, House Judiciary Committee spokesman Russell Dye told CNN. A Republican House Oversight Committee spokesperson told CNN the same thing. The top Democrat on the House Oversight Committee, Representative Jamie Raskin, old Friar Cuck himself, said Republicans have not shared where they got the evidence to make this accusation to the CIA in the first place. Now, I feel very bad for Jamie Raskin that he hasn't gotten to see the evidence, but the fact that Jamie Raskin hasn't seen it doesn't mean that it isn't real. This is a serious charge, but you have completely ignored my staff's requests to be allowed to review the information that you say prompted your letter and upon which your letter is putatively and entirely based. Raskin wrote to Comer on Friday. The witness, who Republicans allege the CIA blocked from being interviewed, is Kevin Morris, who serves as Hunter Biden's lawyer and sugar brother, by the way, and has previously testified that he cooperated with the criminal investigation by turning over documents and speaking with investigators. Republicans have questions about why Morris lent the president's son millions of dollars and have sought to connect him to their impeachment inquiry into President Biden. Morris is the guy who paid off Hunter Biden's tax bill. Morris has explained the terms of the $6.5 million in loans and said they had nothing to do with the president. Meanwhile, even one of the IRS whistleblowers who has claimed the criminal case into the president's son deviated from normal practices has also testified that he met with Morris. And they're referring to Gary Shapley here and trying to insinuate that because Shapley met with Morris at one point, that means that the IRS and the DOJ did not interfere in any way. So what are we to make of this? Do we know if the IRS and the DOJ interfered or not? Well, no, of course we don't. We have a claim on one side. We have a counterclaim on the other side. Where does each claim come from? We're told on one side the claim comes from a whistleblower. And that claim is being repeated. These people are staking their reputation on it. And I'm talking about James Comer and Jim Jordan. Most people in MAGA think that these are two pretty good guys. They haven't gotten the job done during these last 3.5 years, but we cannot just assume that that's because they're bad guys or because they're incompetent. We're dealing with a complicated situation. We can give them the benefit of the doubt or not. That's up to you. They're saying they have a whistleblower who is making claims that certainly could map onto reality. You can see how those claims would be true. They would align with much of what else we know has been happening over the past few years. And on the other side, you have CNN reporting as fact that these claims have been refuted based on the CIA says so. So far, we don't know the substance of the claim. We know who's making one side of the claim, reportedly a whistleblower and two congressmen who people are prepared to at least give the benefit of the doubt. And on the other side, we have a totally discredited news organization, CNN, presenting as fact a claim with no evidence behind it. It is just a claim from authority, that authority being the also thoroughly discredited CIA. Now, these associations are not a nailed down argument, and you shouldn't treat them that way. But if what we're trying to do is find some workable way through this using our discernment, then CNN and the CIA are off to a bad start. Now let's consider the stakes for both sides. If the whistleblower is lying, well, he is making up things against an illegitimate, dictatorial, authoritarian, totalitarian, uniparty regime and the puppet Manchurian candidate that is supposedly leading this fake administration on behalf of that global regime, they clearly won't hesitate to persecute and prosecute their political opponents or anyone who stands in their way. So that whistleblower absolutely has skin in the game to be making claims like this. James Comer and Jim Jordan also have skin in the game because they would be thoroughly discredited for believing a whistleblower who then turns out to be lying to them. They would be accusing the fake president of something terrible on the basis of false claims. And let's look at the other side of the equation. Who has skin in the game on the other side of the equation? Does the CIA face any negative consequences if this claim that they have made turns out to be false? Or if it turns out that they are manipulating language here to deny that something is true simply by obfuscating the situation? For instance, maybe they're making a very particular and specific claim that is literally true, but is presented in such a way that it will convince people of things that are not true. Let's read it again. Without confirming or denying the existence of any associations or communications, CIA did not prevent or seek to prevent IRS or DOJ from conducting any such interview. The allegation is false. Well, what if they sought to prevent some other agency from conducting any such interview, and that agency was then discouraging of IRS or DOJ from conducting any such interview along the same lines? Well, then the CIA's statement would have been factually correct because they did not directly seek to prevent IRS or DOJ from doing anything. But all of that was done in the service of obfuscating what they really did. But the question is, if it turns out they're lying, would anything happen? No, of course not. This kind of lie to the CIA is like throwing a penny in a wishing well for a billionaire. They have zero skin in the game here. Their trust, their reputation, nothing will be affected if they are lying here. There is no downside for them lying to CNN. Likewise, there is no downside for CNN lying to the people. They've already been thoroughly discredited. They have one tiny audience, one small proportion of what their audience used to be. And even among that audience, they don't take CNN that seriously. They don't assume that everything CNN reports is factual. They just like that presentation of the central narrative. That's what they connect with. That is how they brand themselves personally. They see those messages. They carry those messages out into the world, repeating the slogans, feeling like because CNN said it, that is enough for them to go on. If a CNN audience member gets proven wrong after having repeated the slogans they saw on CNN, they'll just say, well, you know, it wasn't my mistake. It was CNN's mistake. CNN reported that. I believe them. They are the most trusted name in news. The damage that could be done to CNN's reputation has already been done. It's like when you look at the approval ratings of Congress, you're like 9%. How could this not be 0%? And the truth is, you're just going to have people that can't let go of anything that they used to like or used to believe. People don't want to think about the fact that all of those things they learned from CNN could actually be false. They don't want to go back through each and every one of those claims and vet them. So they'll just keep on going. Those people are not going to care if CNN got this story wrong, and neither is anybody else because everyone else has already left. So again, on one side, we have the whistleblower, Jim Jordan and James Comer, all of them with skin in the game. Their reputations can actually be torn down by being wrong. And you would imagine they could be pursued legally for that as well. And likely would be because the fake president and his illegitimate regime are experiencing an existential crisis, as are the people who control them. It's not like there's something they won't do. And then on the other side, you've got CIA and CNN. No one is going to hold either organization accountable for being wrong or for lying. They could have made all of this up, and there is still no downside. And still, they expect that we will believe them. We will take it on the authority of CNN as they take it on the authority of the CIA. And we're just going to believe them. They expect us to believe them. But let's keep going. This is from yesterday in the New York Post. Bird flu pandemic could be 100 times worse than COVID. Scientists warn. Oh, scientists. A bird flu pandemic with the potential to be 100 times worse than COVID may be on the horizon. Maybe. After a rare human case was discovered in Texas, experts have warned. The H5N1 avian flu has spread rapidly since a new strain was detected in 2020, affecting wild birds in every state, as well as in commercial poultry and backyard flocks. That's right. They went around testing birds in every state to see if they had the very scary variant of H5N1 that was detected in 2020. And now it's jumped to a human in a wet market. Oh, if only that human had been wearing a mask. This virus has been on the top of the pandemic list for many, many years and probably decades. Dr. Suresh Kuchipudi, a bird flu researcher from Pittsburgh, said at a recent panel discussing the issue, according to the Daily Mail. And now we're getting dangerously close to this virus potentially causing a pandemic. Now, if that ain't the science, I don't know what is. It's been on the top of the pandemic list for many, many years and probably decades. That is the first scientific claim. And the second very scientific claim is, now we're getting dangerously close, a scientific term, to this virus potentially, scientific term, causing a pandemic. So we've got dangerously close and potentially, and you put those next to viruses, which definitely exist, and pandemics, which definitely exist. How do I know both of those exist? Well, we had a very deadly pandemic just back in 2020. And everything about that was real. Do you know how many cases there were? Millions upon millions upon millions. How did they know? Tests that don't work. But let's keep going with this incredible scientist. He noted that the H5N1 virus has already been detected in species throughout the world and, quote, has shown the ability to infect a range of mammalian hosts, including humans. So therefore, in my view, I think this is a virus that has the greatest pandemic threat that is playing out in plain sight and globally present, Kuchipudi said. John Fulton, a pharmaceutical industry consultant for vaccines and the founder of Canada-based BioNiagara, who organized the meeting, also expressed his concerns. This appears to be 100 times worse than COVID, or it could be if it mutates and maintains its high case fatality rate, he said. Once it's mutated to infect humans, we can only hope that the fatality rate drops. Except here's the thing. We're being told it has infected a human. That human is fine. So right now, its fatality rate is 0 out of 1, at least for this variant. The old variants of H5N1, oh, they're dangerous. But this one, 0 out of 1, which is roughly what COVID's fatality rate was. It had an infection fatality rate equivalent to the average flu. But wait a second. The tests don't work. And the people who died, died in hospitals and nursing homes at advanced age and with multiple comorbidities. And they had been on the receiving end of a medical protocol that was designed to kill them. There were people who died in car accidents that were counted as COVID deaths. There were people who were murdered who were counted as COVID deaths. There is absolutely no reason not to default to the position that every single COVID death was either an example of medical malpractice or data malpractice. They don't actually have the ability to prove that there were any COVID deaths. Let's go through the statement of Pharma Vaccine Guy once again. This appears to be 100 times worse than COVID. So 100 times 0 is 0. Or it could be if it mutates and maintains its high case fatality rate. Once it's mutated to infect humans, we can only hope that the fatality rate drops. But let's get some more of the official story from the New York Post. Around 52% of humans who have contracted H5N1 since 2003 have died, according to the World Health Organization. And naturally, they are applying the exact same standards here. And we haven't talked about a lot of this in a couple of years, but if you want to have a good time, try to figure out how they can tell which variant a person has. You think they're actually checking every single test that doesn't even work? No, they're not. They're testing far less than 1% of tests. They test a few samples per week and then suggest based on that that they are able to test and model and predict the spread of the newest very scary variant. The entire thing is an absolute clown show and farce. Back to the Post. For comparison, COVID currently kills less than 0.1% of those it infects, though at the start of the pandemic, the fatality rate was around 20%. COVID killing 20% of the people it infects at the start of the pandemic. Do any of you remember that? Of course not, because that didn't happen. COVID was present in the United States, if the data is to be believed, since the fall of 2019. And we didn't mask, we didn't lock down, we didn't change a damn thing in our society for 4.5 to 5.5 months after that. The entire time, the very deadly pandemic was just jumping from person to person, spreading as it always does. And no one died. No one died at home. No one fell over in the streets as we were told they were doing in China. But this one is 100 times more deadly than that one, which means that right now, 2,000% of people who contract this new, very scary variant of the bird flu are dead. So far, it's been one person to contract the virus, and because he did, 20 people are now dead. But thank goodness he wasn't one of them. Hopefully, the virus will continue mutating, because while this article noted that the current death rate for COVID is under 0.1%, they failed to note that the death rate for COVID was always under 1%. And that was based on tests that don't work and a massive fear campaign. 100 times zero is still zero. And let's just hit a few more spots here. The agency and the whole U.S. government is taking this situation very seriously. CDC Director Mandy Cohen told the Washington Post. They're very concerned because it's been found in cattle. And of course, that one person contracted this very scary variant of this very deadly pandemic. His only symptom so far has been a pink eye, but that's sort of dead. I mean, you're at least kind of out of commission for a little while, or I mean, at least you, it's not like you want to go to the opera with pink eye, you know, it's like basically dead. Mandy Cohen maintained that the virus does not pose much of a risk to the general public, noting that the dairy worker was in direct contact with infected cattle, and the USDA said there are currently no changes that would make it more transmissible to humans. Huh, thank goodness. But it's still worrisome, because just last week it wasn't in cattle, and now it is. And you know, once it's in cattle, it's gonna affect those humans, because humans, they just can't keep their hands off of those cattle. If the virus does mutate enough to infect humans, it could spread rapidly. The European Food Safety Authority warned on Wednesday, according to Fox News. If avian A, H5N1, influenza viruses acquire the ability to spread efficiently among humans, large-scale transmission could occur due to the lack of immune defenses against H5 viruses in humans, the Food Safety Authority said. Gosh, it sounds like they're describing exactly how they're going to target this virus. But they would never do that. That's a conspiracy theory. Viruses just start in animals, and then they jump to other animals, and then they jump to humans, and then everybody's dead. To prevent any potential spread, the U.S. is already testing components used to create a vaccine for the virus. And two candidate vaccine viruses appear to be well matched to protect against H5N1, the Washington Post reports. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre also said the Biden administration is monitoring the threat. "We take the health and safety of the American people seriously," she said at her briefing on Wednesday. "It is very important to this president. Our top priority is to keep communities healthy, safe, and informed." Now, we have heard about avian, bird flu, H5N1 many, many times over the years. In fact, Dr. Joseph Mercola wrote a book about it in 2006. You can still find this book on Amazon. It's called The Great Bird Flu Hoax. The description on Amazon: "The U.S. government is now practically screaming that a new avian superflu will likely kill millions of Americans. The mainstream media is entirely on board, as are drug companies and other corporations poised to benefit immensely off the paranoia. But there is no coming bird flu pandemic. It's an elaborate scheme contrived by the government and big business for reasons that boil down to power and money. Presenting eye-opening evidence that casts serious doubt on the truthfulness of reports about the virus's ability to transmit and its mortality rates around the world, renowned physician Dr. Joseph Mercola reveals the secrets about the great bird flu hoax. In compelling fashion, he provides you the real facts you need to know to protect you from a far greater ill, corporate and governmental greed." And this sounds exactly like the scenario we face right now, except he published this 18 years ago, and we have already seen that same thing play out with COVID. Now, there are people out there, and maybe people who have just started listening to my show in the last year or the last few months, who still think that we had a very deadly pandemic. The pandemic of 2020 was virtue signaling, fear, and retardation, and absolutely nothing else. The idea that it is worth destroying society in a failed attempt to make sure people cannot become infected with a disease that can't kill them is one of the worst ideas and worst decisions humans have ever made throughout human history. The globally recommended response to the COVID pandemic was the worst scientific, political, and moral disaster that the world has ever seen. But here we are in an election year, and they are running the same playbook. They're even telling us they have vaccines ready to go. But let's think back to 2020. We were told that the coronavirus, COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, came from a cave in China where bats live. That bat was brought to a wet market in Wuhan, and someone bought some bat soup and got infected with COVID, and then infected a friend, and that friend infected three friends. And all of a sudden, if you don't put a mask on while you walk to the bathroom in a restaurant, you're killing someone's grandma. That very deadly pandemic happened naturally. It just sprang forth spontaneously from nature, and it absolutely did not come from the Wuhan Institute of Virology that was experimenting with viruses right down the street. And it definitely won't happen this time either. It's just nature. This is just what nature does in an election year. And the thing is, you've got to trust the science. You cannot doubt the science. If you do doubt the science, you are a conspiracy theorist. Just listen to what the Associated Press said in 2022, May 17th, 2022, conspiracy theorists flock to bird flu, spreading falsehoods. The AP wants everybody to know that not only is bird flu real, it's very, very dangerous, particularly to birds. And because of that, you don't want it to happen to humans. You gotta trust the science when it comes to the birds. Even if you think humans are going to be okay, you got to know it's very real for the birds. So they interview a bunch of chicken farmers who say, yes, it's very real. No one could ever doubt the science on this. We witness it every day. From the article: "While it poses little risk to humans, the global outbreak has led farmers to cull millions of birds and threatens to add to already rising food prices." You see that? Bird flu also explains inflation in food prices. Therefore, the inflation is not only not Joe Biden's fault, the bird flu will also be the reason why he wins, because everyone trusts Joe Biden to handle a pandemic. It's also spawning fantastical claims similar to the ones that arose during the COVID-19 pandemic, underscoring how conspiracy theories often emerge at times of uncertainty, and how the internet and a deepening distrust of science and institutions fuel their spread. Gosh, what an important and salient point. They are absolutely right. They tell us, hey, there's a very scary pandemic. And we say, what? Are you sure about that? I really don't think there is. Some people believe it. That means that there is some uncertainty throughout society. Some people believe something. Other people believe a different thing. That means there is uncertainty. We can't go on this way. We need everyone to believe the claim that we pass down from the authoritative source. Otherwise, society is just going to fall apart. When there's uncertainty, each side is going to try to convince everyone that they're right and the other side is wrong. And whenever a conversation like this is had in public, it actually does tear down trust in the media and in our institutions. You gotta wonder why that is. But what were these conspiracy theorists saying? The claims can be found on obscure online message boards and major platforms like Twitter. Some versions claim the flu is fake, a hoax being used to justify reducing the supply of birds in an effort to drive up food prices, either to wreck the global economy or force people into vegetarianism. Other posters insist the flu is real, but that it was genetically engineered as a weapon possibly intended to touch off a new round of COVID-style lockdowns. A version of the story popular in India posits that 5G cell towers are somehow to blame for the virus. And of course, that would never be the claim. The claim would be that the cell towers are to blame for the symptoms and the conditions that are being attributed by the experts to the non-existent virus. And just a bit more here from this article. As evidence, many of those claiming that the flu is fake note that animal health authorities monitoring the outbreak are using some of the same technology used to test for COVID-19. They're testing the animals for bird flu with PCR tests. That should give you a clue as to what's going on, wrote one Twitter user in a post that's been liked and retweeted thousands of times. That is a fantastic point, by the way. In truth, PCR tests have been used routinely in medicine, biology, and even law enforcement for decades. Their creator won a Nobel Prize in 1993. Yep, he sure did. He also came out before he died and said that they don't work to detect viruses. And obviously, all of this is well documented. USA Today attempted to do a fact check on it back in January of 2022. The headline, Fact Check, comments from PCR test creator lacking context in social media post. So they are going to debunk Carrie Mullis's claims about the PCR test. This Nobel Prize winning creator of the PCR test is simply wrong according to the new science. Mullis said, anyone can test positive for practically anything with a PCR test. If you run it long enough with PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in the body. It doesn't tell you that you're sick. USA Today writes, fact-checking organizations debunked similar versions of this claim in November 2020, but the quote continues to make the rounds on social media without proper context. While Mullis made the statement attributed to him, he was speaking about how he opposed using PCR tests to detect HIV, not COVID-19. Except, of course, the same thing applies. And if you go back through the history of HIV, you'll find out that that whole crisis was also a treatment crisis after using tests that didn't work. And who ran it? Anthony Fauci. But those conspiracy theorists are out there spreading disinformation, very dangerous medical disinformation, by the way. And it's important that we all take the threats of very deadly pandemics very, very seriously. Pandemics spring up naturally, just spontaneously out of nothing. They infect animals, then they infect bigger animals, and then they infect the biggest animals, the humans, and then humans infect all other humans, and everyone dies. That's how it works, but it all happens from nature. It could never happen from a lab at all. No one would ever think otherwise, except, wait, here's this thing. It's from this kind of random website. It's like the dark web. It's, CDC.gov. CDC.gov/flu/avian flu. They have this page. It must be a mistake. Probably a conspiracy theorist posted this on there for them. Dual use research of concern and bird flu. Questions and answers. Now, dual use research of concern is also known as gain of function. And they have a subsection with the heading, what is gain of function bird flu research? It says gain of function research is research that seeks to alter the functional characteristics of a virus. Let's continue. The next heading. What is the public health justification for engaging in bird flu research that falls into the categories of DURC, dual use research of concern, gain of function, or enhanced PPP? And there you have the three different terms that they use interchangeably. They just change the language when everyone decides, whoa, wait, we don't really like the sound of that. They're like, okay, don't worry. It's actually called something else. PPP, by the way, is potential pandemic pathogens. So what do you think it means when those are enhanced? And let's read some more subsection headings here. Is CDC conducting any DURC or enhanced PPP research on bird flu viruses? And they let you know that during the period of the moratorium where this kind of research was disallowed, they didn't do that. And now they're evaluating the need on whether or not they should do that. And for the record, at the bottom of this page, it notes that this article was last reviewed in 2019. So you can assume this is current as of 2019. But let's continue. Next subsection heading. Does CDC currently conduct gain-of-function research on bird flu viruses? Now that the moratorium has been lifted, CDC will determine whether to conduct gain-of-function research on bird flu viruses on a case-by-case basis. And finally, has CDC done gain-of-function research on highly pathogenic avian influenza A, H5N1, in the past? Yes. CDC has conducted gain-of-function research in the past on HPAI viruses as part of a pandemic preparedness effort. For example, in 2006, CDC conducted an experiment that sought to understand how Asian A, H5N1, bird flu viruses might become more transmissible in mammals. Wait, that's the same year that Dr. Joseph Mercola published that bird flu hoax book. I wonder if those two things had anything to do with one another. So that article is from the CDC. That is straight from the authoritative source. That is the science. And just so no one thinks I'm not doing proper science right now, this is from science.org. This is obviously the science. Exclusive, controversial experiments that could make bird flu more risky, poised to resume. Wow, this is February 8th, 2019, just 1 year before the very deadly COVID pandemic became part of our daily lives. Controversial lab studies that modify bird flu viruses in ways that could make them more risky to humans will soon resume after being on hold for more than 4 years. Science Insider has learned that last year, a U.S. government review panel quietly approved experiments proposed by two labs that were previously considered so dangerous that federal officials had imposed an unusual top-down moratorium on such research. One of the projects has already received funding from the NIH's NIAID in Bethesda, Maryland, and will start in a few weeks. The other is awaiting funding. Now, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases is once again Anthony Fauci, or at least it was. Obviously, Fauci is now retired. The outcome may not satisfy scientists who believe certain studies that aim to make pathogens more potent or more likely to spread in mammals are so risky they should be limited or even banned. That is obviously true because the point of these studies is always to create vaccines to combat or protect against these viruses that they create. Some are upset that the government's review will not be made public. After a deliberative process that cost $1 million for a consultant's external study and consumed countless weeks and months of time for many scientists, we are now being asked to trust a completely opaque process where the outcome is to permit the continuation of dangerous experiments, says Harvard University epidemiologist Mark Lipsitch. Gosh, that Harvard scientist sounds like a conspiracy theorist. One of the investigators leading the study, however, says he's happy he can resume his experiments. "We are glad the United States government weighed the risks and benefits and developed new oversight mechanisms. We know that it does carry risks. We also believe it is important to work to protect human health." Advocates of such gain-of-function studies say they can help public health experts better understand how viruses might spread and plan for pandemics. But by enabling the bird virus to more easily spread among mammals, the experiments also raised fears that the pathogen could jump to humans. And critics of the work worried that such a souped-up virus could spark a pandemic if it escaped from a lab or was intentionally released by a bioterrorist. After extensive discussion about whether the two studies should even be published, they ultimately were, and a voluntary moratorium by the two labs, the experiments resumed in 2013 under new U.S. oversight rules. So, okay, fine. It is not a conspiracy theory that virologists work in labs to make these viruses more transmissible and more deadly. Now, it is indeed possible that all of this is a ruse, including the lab origin theory. The important thing here is that you accept the underlying reality of viral pandemics. They will create a controlled opposition dynamic along all sorts of different vectors within this grand pandemic narrative. You can argue over the origin. Was it natural? Was it from a lab? In either case, the existence of the viral pandemic remains. Do the tests work or don't they? Well, we know they don't work. They can't work. The inventor says they can't work. And the cycle threshold that they are run creates a rate of false positives expected to be above 90%. Do the masks work? Yes or no. Do the lockdowns work? Yes or no. Do we need vaccines? Yes or no. Do the vaccines work? Yes or no. Should the vaccines be mandated? Yes or no. Each one of those conversations happens within that controlled opposition dynamic. And the truth is, the people pushing all of this on us win either way because everyone already accepts the notion that viruses cause pandemics. And that would help a lot if, for instance, you wanted to poison society in some other way. No one would ever consider another option. Everyone is already convinced, yes, this must be a viral pandemic. And now they are giving us a new one. So anything that happens this summer that gives anyone symptoms, anything like this, well, that's going to be bird flu. We could be looking at another very deadly pandemic. We could be looking at a pandemic so deadly that we might need mail-in ballots. And I know some people out there are like, they didn't make up the pandemic. The pandemic was real. They lied about it a lot. Okay, the test didn't work. Okay, the vaccines didn't work. Okay, the lockdowns didn't work. Okay, the social distancing didn't work. Okay, I could do this all day. So they lied about the pandemic, but the pandemic itself was real. People are convinced of that. And the next pandemic will also be real. Now, pure speculation here, but let's say in a few months, people start having all sorts of terrible conditions, and we are told that all of these conditions, these symptoms, they are all related to the H5N1 avian influenza A viral pandemic that is just growing throughout our society. What happens if we find out that like 95% of the people who are becoming infected with that were people who took one or more COVID shots? And what happens if we hear the same sort of thing that we heard about long COVID? Long COVID just so happens to have all the same symptoms as the negative side effects of COVID shots. What if something in the environment causes people who took the COVID vaccine to react badly and to exhibit symptoms and conditions that are also being described as H5N1 avian influenza A. Would we be experiencing a very deadly pandemic, or would we be seeing the result of an environmental triggering of some lingering effect from the COVID shot? Now, I'm not saying this to suggest that that is what will happen. What I'm saying is, if we all are convinced that a viral pandemic is right around the corner again, and we experience this narrative seeding that tells us this is something to look out for, and then we begin seeing it, and we already believe in the underlying reality of viral pandemics, then we may not be inclined to look for other explanations for what is happening to us, our friends, our family, our coworkers, whoever. And at that point, you are already stuck within that controlled opposition dynamic. Whether you protest or whether you accept and play along with everything, you are still right where they want you. They will be totally okay if you have figured out all of their little tricks about their pandemic narrative, so long as you focus on arguing with the other side of the controlled opposition dynamic while never questioning the underlying story that allows them to continue to run these narratives over and over and over again. And of course, they expect you to believe it all because it's the science, and because you know that people feel sick in real life. What else do they expect us to believe? Well, let's go to space. This is a couple of weeks ago, March 19th, on defensenews.com, Northrop DARPA envisioned moon railroad for lunar logistics. Got that? A railroad on the moon. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency is working with Northrop Grumman, that is a massive defense contractor, to flesh out a concept for a moon-based railroad network. The envisioned lunar railroad network could transport humans, supplies, and resources for commercial ventures across the lunar surface, contributing to a space economy for the United States and international partners, Northrop said in a statement. Okay, so they told us what railroads do, and they said it's going to be on the moon. That is all that statement says. The company's work will focus on identifying the interfaces, resources, and funding needed to build such a network, as well as the technological and logistical risks. All right, well, so far, this just sounds like they're going to get a lot of money. It's going to require a lot of money for them to figure out how they might do it before they move on to the other steps of figuring out how they will do it and then actually doing it. But thank goodness they have enough money to get started on telling us what railroads do. The effort is part of DARPA's Lunar Architecture Capability Study, or LUNA 10. The 7-month study will not fund construction or hardware development, but is instead designed to identify the technologies that are foundational to develop a future infrastructure on the moon. Now, all of that is ridiculous so far. A railroad on the moon. We can't even get high-speed rail finished in California, or anywhere in the United States for that matter. And every time they start doing one of those projects, the cost is like 100 times more than they ever thought it would be, as they just pay off consultants and regulators and their friends in various industries. And all of these become a massive boondoggle and a giveaway. Now, we are told we've made it to the moon before. In fact, we made it to the moon in a vehicle made out of aluminum foil and shower rods that somehow carried a go-kart up there. And then they set up a camera, filmed the whole thing, got back in the vehicle made out of shower rods and aluminum foil, and flew all the way back to Earth while leaving the camera there. And it just continued to broadcast. How? We don't know. They must have brought 2 used soup cans with a string between them, just a really, really long string. And through that, they sent the audio and video back to Earth. That's how we know that they definitely landed on the moon. Now, Unfortunately, they were not able to get back to the moon for a long time. Like 50 years, no moon landings. Turns out we lost the technology. And that sucks for the science. I mean, the science usually doesn't make mistakes like that. Sure, they told us masks worked and that social distancing worked and lockdowns worked and vaccines worked. And they were obviously intentionally wrong about all of that. But losing the technology to get back to the moon? What a scientific disaster. Now, while there is absolutely no way I would ever believe that they are going to put a train on the moon, there is something of interest in this article, so I will share that with you. Northrop was one of 14 companies DARPA selected in December to explore concepts to support a future lunar economy by 2035. Clown show. Focus areas for those studies, though, include power generation, moon mining and resource utilization, navigation, and mobility and logistics. The firms selected include launch providers, startups, defense prime contractors, and tech companies. DARPA has not disclosed the value of the contracts it awarded. The studies come as the U.S., its international partners, and commercial firms envision future activity around the moon. In recent years, DARPA and the Air Force Research Laboratory have started several programs to explore logistics and satellite sensing in a lunar environment. Now, while I will make fun of this project, I'm not going to make fun of all of this stuff. It actually is good to study things, and there are things going on in the sky, even if we are not going to put a railroad on the moon. We still have satellites in the sky, transmitting energy and information, a growing network of those placed there by Starlink, and SpaceX is quite possibly building out a parallel energy and communications infrastructure. I'm not trying to take away from any of that, but it's entirely possible that all of that work is being done under a cover story. The Space Force's interest in the military utility of operations around the moon is also growing. The service in February announced plans to create a Space Futures Command that will validate forward-looking concepts and emerging missions. Cislunar operations, defined as activity around the moon, is one of the first concepts the command will explore. Why not get on the moon and start building the railroad? Speaking March 18th at the Satellite 2024 conference in Washington, D.C., Lieutenant General Sean Bratton, the Space Force's Chief Strategy and Resourcing Officer, said Space Futures Command's cislunar work will focus on understanding whether operations in that environment offer military benefits to the service. The plan is then to share that information with Chief of Space Operations General Chance Saltzman and Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall. I think there's an important mission there. I can't prove that there's military utility there, Bratton said. I think we owe the boss, both General Saltzman and the Secretary, a little bit better data that validates that. Yes, cislunar is critical, and here's how we should use it. And then 2 days ago, April 3rd, we get this from NASA. This is on NASA.gov. NASA selects companies to advance moon mobility for Artemis missions. NASA has selected Intuitive Machines, Lunar Outpost, and Venturi Astrolab to advance capabilities for a lunar terrain vehicle that Artemis astronauts will use to travel around the lunar surface, conducting scientific research during the agency's Artemis campaign at the moon and preparing for human missions to Mars. So we're going to pretend that all of this is real. They expect us to believe this. We sent a go-kart to the moon like 55 years ago. Then we lost the technology to return. And now we have not only reinvented the technology to return, we also reinvented the technology to take go-karts with us. What we're going to need is a dune buggy that sticks to the surface of the moon so that scientists on the moon can drive around just like they used to 55 years ago. Now, it's worth noting that Intuitive Machines, that's the group that sent that lunar lander to the moon a few weeks back. A successful journey. It landed. It was about to begin broadcasting from the moon, showing us how amazing it was that they had finally reached the moon, the first U.S. moon landing in so long. And sure, Russia, India, and Japan had all gone to the moon before us within the last couple of years, but now we've done it too, and we're going to broadcast exactly what it's like up here on the moon. And besides, their lunar landers, those looked like they were playing Space Invaders or something. That didn't look real. Everybody knows that the key ingredients to a good lunar lander are shower rods and aluminum foil. So Intuitive Machines sent that lunar lander up there. They were about to start broadcasting, and whoops, it tipped over. Their stock shot way up, and then it dropped right back down. Hopefully this new announcement will help it rebound. Let's go on. The awards leverage NASA's expertise in developing and operating rovers to build commercial capabilities that support scientific discovery and long-term human exploration on the moon. NASA intends to begin using the LTV for crewed operations during Artemis V. So the award leverages NASA's expertise in developing and operating rovers, moon rovers. They have expertise in that? When? Where? How do they have expertise in that? It's something that they literally have never done. NASA will acquire the LTV as a service from the industry. The Indefinite Delivery, Indefinite Quantity Milestone-Based Lunar Terrain Vehicle Services contract with firm fixed price task orders has a combined maximum potential value of $4.6 billion for all awards. So they are going to give these three companies, one of them, the company that just sent that lunar lander up there that fell over, whoops, they're going to give them $4.6 billion to develop a go-kart, a dune buggy, for the moon so that when, and more importantly, if we ever actually send people up there again, they will be able to drive around to do science. They expect you to believe this. And if you say, hey, you know, I don't believe that that moon landing we've all seen on television actually happened. I don't actually believe you flew a vehicle made out of shower rods and aluminum foil up to the moon, landed it, filmed yourselves doing it, broadcast that to Earth, and then returned. I just don't believe you did that. You're a conspiracy theorist. And that's true while they tell you that they're going to build a railroad system up there and also ship some go-karts and dune buggies up there so that people can drive around. They're the smart ones. They're the scientists. You're a conspiracy theorist who doesn't care about science. Now, they've never done this before. We don't know when they'll ever do it again. Because of that, they have no idea what would work, but they know what kinds of characteristics this lunar terrain vehicle will have. This is NASA again. The LTV will be able to handle the extreme conditions at the moon's south pole and will feature advanced technologies for power management, autonomous driving, and state-of-the-art communication and navigation systems. Crews will use the LTV to explore, transport scientific equipment, and collect samples of the lunar surface much farther than they could on foot, enabling increased science returns. Increased science returns. $4.6 billion, and you can expect someday we might have increased science returns. By the way, here's some more science. Just to conclude this article, we want to get all the science in there. Through Artemis, NASA will send astronauts, including the first woman, first person of color, and its first international partner astronaut, to explore the moon for scientific discovery, technological evolution, economic benefits, and to build the foundation for crewed missions to Mars. advanced rovers, along with the agency's Space Launch System rocket and Orion spacecraft, commercial human landing systems, and next-generation spacesuits, and Gateway are NASA's foundation for deep space exploration. They expect you to believe that. But that's not all. This is also from April 3rd. This is Time Magazine. Why the White House wants the moon to have its own time zone. Ever wonder what time it is on the moon? Soon there will be an answer to that question. Hey, the answer for absolutely everyone is no. No one has ever wondered what time it is on the moon. The White House on Tuesday directed NASA to establish a first-ever unified standard of time for the moon and other celestial bodies by the end of 2026. Gosh, I hope they have enough time to make up what time it is on the moon. As part of a push by the U.S. to set international norms in space. All our norms have been destroyed here in the United States because of Donald Trump and his MAGA extremists. So we've got to set up some international norms in space. The prospect of a lunar time zone comes as the U.S. and private companies are rushing to send astronauts to the moon in the coming years, some hoping to deliver internet services to the lunar surface and expand exploration efforts. And listen, guys, if the dark side of the moon conspiracy theories are correct and there's a base up there, all right, you got me. But here's the thing. All of this is so retarded, and the claims on the other side so improbable that you are the conspiracy theorist for believing any of this, not me for denying it. Let's stop being ridiculous. This is a Nazi propaganda organization that operates as though it is our greatest scientific institution ever. They have provided us with all of our scientific advancements forever. Therefore, they really do go out into space and land on the moon and build railroads there and design little dune buggies so they can drive around collecting science, increasing science returns. And I'm real, real sorry to make fun of the science in this way, but there's no proof that they have ever done any of the things they have claimed to do. They launched the Challenger rocket that blew up in the sky with the entire nation watching the television. They told us that all of the astronauts inside it were going to go live on the International Space Station. The rocket blew up in the sky, and those astronauts just kept on living here on Earth. What thing did they definitely do? Until you can prove that, absolutely beyond question and beyond a shadow of a doubt, I am not required to believe any of this nonsense. And the more they lie about it, the less likely I am to believe even the underlying stories that they claim are true. And if that makes me a conspiracy theorist, or that makes me scientifically ignorant, well, I am more than happy to accept that. Think about our existential threats. I've talked about this before. Existential threats, very deadly pandemics, climate change, AI, nuclear war, aliens, or other threats from outer space like asteroids. Are any of those real as described? Are any of those existential threats? There is no reason to believe that any of them are, that any of the threats are as described. Which is not to say that none of those carry a threat in any way. AI, of course, absolutely does carry a threat with it. AI is already part of our lives and has been a destructive part of our lives up till this point. That doesn't mean that it is inherently destructive or that it will ultimately end up being, on the whole, very destructive, much less that it will destroy all of us. But it certainly had its downside so far. Regardless, these existential threats cannot even be substantiated in reality But in response, because we are expected to believe these things, many people believe it is smart to believe the things we are expected to believe, which is 100% backwards. But because of the mass of belief in these existential threats, people amend their behavior to correspond with the threats. They do what they're told because they are also told, if you disobey, you will all be destroyed. Everything you know and love will be wiped out, and it will be your fault. This will be a man-made disaster. Man, and I'm talking about humanity here, man will be the cause of his own demise. You should understand that that claim is a total inversion of religious belief. Man has the power to end all of existence. That is what they claim. This is how they tell us it will happen. And even the people who are less skeptical of science than I am understand that very deadly pandemics and climate change are scams. This article is short. Let's go through the rest of it. OSTP Director for National Security Steve Welby said in a statement that the White House is aiming to establish celestial time standards, quote, for safety and accuracy, end quote, as NASA, private companies, and international space agencies prepare to launch missions to the moon and other celestial bodies, such as Mars. A consistent definition of time among operators in space is critical to successful space situational awareness capabilities, navigation, and communications, says Welby, all of which are foundational to enable interoperability across the U.S. government and with international partners. And all of that was a Welby quote, by the way. Currently, time on Earth and at the International Space Station, which is in low orbit, are tracked by atomic clocks under coordinated universal time, the international basis of civil and scientific time. But the time zone in space is not quite the same as on Earth due to differences in gravity and other factors. You get it? No, of course not. No one gets it, but it's science. Time on the moon moves 58.7 microseconds or millionths of a second faster each day than on Earth, according to the White House memo. The last crewed mission to the moon took place more than 50 years ago, in December 1972, when Apollo 17 astronauts touched the lunar surface more than 400 miles away from Earth. Budget constraints and technological challenges have since hindered subsequent crewed missions to the moon, but NASA is planning to send astronauts to the moon once again in September 2026 under its Artemis program, which aims to land the first woman and person of color on the moon and help prepare for future human expeditions to Mars. And they are putting a woman and a person of color there, all in the name of science. And, you know, science requires equity among scientists. You wouldn't want to put the most qualified scientist there. Gotta have a woman, gotta have a person of color. That's the science. Establishing a new lunar time zone will require international agreements, the memo says, through existing standards bodies and among the 36 nations participating in the Artemis Accords, which outlines guidelines for activities in space and on the moon. And this really does sound like the global regime is just trying to set the rules on what Donald Trump is going to be allowed to do in space. They are going to bring the international community together to make sure that Donald Trump can't do those things that he wants to do. And what does he want to do? Well, I don't know, but Space Force is involved in all of this, and Elon Musk was the largest Department of Defense contractor under Donald Trump, and Elon's got that whole satellite system and that whole new battery technology thing that is creating a new parallel electrical grid and communications infrastructure from up there to down here. So it seems like they're doing the exact same things we discussed yesterday when it comes to NATO attempting to tie Donald Trump's hands and fund their Ukraine efforts before he comes back into office, because they know that's inevitable. And then you got the illegitimate Biden administration trying to change the rules and the designations for federal employees so Donald Trump can't fire them. Of course they're going to try to set up the rules for what Donald Trump can do in space regarding this communications and energy infrastructure of the next generation that is being built. But sure, they're just going to decide what time it is on the moon and have everyone agree. And you are expected to believe this. But let's keep going. This is also April 3rd, 2 days ago, also from science.nasa.gov. Scientists pursue the total solar eclipse with NASA jet planes. They're going to chase the eclipse. The April 8th, 2024 total solar eclipse will produce stunning views across North America, while anyone along the eclipse path with a clear sky will see the spectacular event. The best view might be 50,000 feet in the air aboard NASA's WB-57 jet planes. That's where a trio of NASA-funded teams are sending their scientific instruments to take measurements of the eclipse. So we've gone from dune buggies on the moon in order to increase science returns, and now we're going to send jet planes in the sky to increase science returns by measuring the eclipse. Two teams will image the sun's outer atmosphere, the corona. Oh, wow. And a third will measure the ionosphere, the upper electrically charged layer of Earth's atmosphere. This information will help scientists better understand the structure and temperature of the corona, the effects of the sun on Earth's atmosphere, and even aid in the search of asteroids that may orbit near the sun. Okay. During a total solar eclipse, the moon perfectly blocks the bright face of the sun, casting a small swath of Earth in darkness. With the sun's main light masked, the much dimmer solar corona becomes visible to the naked eye. This provides scientists a unique opportunity to study this mysterious region of the sun. The brief blocking of sunlight also allows scientists to study how the sun's light affects Earth's atmosphere. Now, just from my perspective, I figured this was the sort of thing that the science already knows all about. In the past, solar eclipses have driven numerous scientific discoveries. For this solar eclipse, NASA is funding several scientific experiments, including the three using the WB-57s to make measurements during the eclipse. I wonder if these guys are just like planning to try to escape into the eclipse. NASA's WB-57s fly much higher than commercial aircraft. This altitude allows the jets to fly above clouds, meaning no chance of missing the eclipse due to bad weather. I guess those are for really, really high clouds. Additionally, the height puts the jets above most of Earth's atmosphere, which allows for the cameras to take crisper images and capture wavelengths such as infrared light that don't make it to the ground. Since the planes can travel at 460 miles an hour, they're also able to extend the time they spend in the moon's shadow. While the eclipse will last no more than 4.5 minutes at any point on the ground, the planes will see an eclipse that lasts about 25% longer, over 6 minutes and 22 seconds. And I'm sure we will get back many, many wonderful pictures from these planes. They will show how real space is and how round Earth is. I can almost guarantee it. I imagine they will be of the same photographic quality as the rest of the pictures NASA shows us from outer space of the Earth. Now, the only problem with those pictures is that each and every one of them is completely and totally fake. They are all artist renderings or computer renderings, but at least that's what they say it looks like. And you are a conspiracy theorist if you don't believe that that artist's rendering that they sell us as a real photograph is actually a real photograph. It's amazing that saying, hey, I think there's at least a chance that it doesn't actually look like those fake pictures show us. Somehow people can't handle that. But let's get back to NASA here. By extending the duration of totality, we are increasing the duration of how much data we can acquire, said Shadia Habal, a researcher at the University of Hawaii who leads one of the WB57 Eclipse experiments. Habal's experiment will fly spectrometers, which record specific wavelengths of light, and cameras. The instruments will measure the temperature and chemical composition of the corona and coronal mass ejections, which are large bursts of solar material. With this data, scientists aim to better understand the structure of the corona and identify the source of the solar wind, the constant stream of particles emitted by the sun. Habal hopes the results of their study will help differentiate between different competing models of how the corona is heated. This light is our best probe short of sticking a thermometer in the corona, Habal said. Got it. So we can't get close enough to the sun to know what it is. The next best option is taking pictures of the sun while it's blocked from a little bit higher than commercial airlines already fly. This time, an improved camera setup will allow measurements in more wavelengths from infrared to visible light that will hopefully reveal new information about structures in the middle and lower corona. The observations taken with a high-resolution, high-speed camera could also help study a dust ring that circles the sun and help search for asteroids that may orbit near the sun. Yes, 50,000 feet closer and with slightly fewer obstructions. That's 10 miles up. That is going to give us, during this total eclipse, the best possible opportunity to know what's going on the sun. This 10-mile difference, it's going to make all the difference, even though the sun is, so we're told, 93 million miles away. Those 50,000 feet, though, are sure to make all the difference. There isn't a lot of data of the sun at some of the wavelengths we'll be studying, one of the people named Caspi said. We don't know what we'll find, so it's extra exciting to be making these measurements. A third experiment will study the effects of the moon's shadow on the ionosphere using an instrument called an ionosonde, which was designed at JHU-APL. I have no idea what any of that is. An ionosonde functions like a simple radar. Oh, so it's a radar. Okay, got it. The device sends out high-frequency radio signals and listens for their echoes rebounding off the ionosphere, which allows the researchers to measure how charged the ionosphere is. They really want to seize their moment here with this total eclipse. What an opportunity we have to take pictures and bounce sound waves off things. This very special moment truly changes everything. The eclipse basically serves as a controlled experiment, said Bharat Kunduri, leader of the Ionosphere Project and a research assistant professor at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia. It gives us an opportunity to understand how changes in solar radiation can impact the ionosphere, which can in turn impact some of these technologies like radar and GPS that we rely on in our daily lives. Now, developing those are good things. Congratulations, science, you're going to nail it. Now, I don't know why this is a controlled experiment. This is a situation that doesn't happen for decades at a time. But hey, all science is good science. I like research. For real. I know I'm making fun of all this, but I do like research. I think it's good that people do experiments and they let us know what they find. Now, I don't trust any of those people. I don't trust that their experiments are good. I don't trust that they are doing those experiments for the purposes of adding to the sum total of truth in the world. I don't trust that they are competent. I don't trust that they will honestly tell us what they will find. I don't trust any of it, but at least in theory, it's good. In theory, it's good. I'm on board with you about all of this science in theory. It just so happens that it doesn't actually play out that way in life, especially not when NASA is involved. And because we have this rare moment, this rare opportunity for science to do as much science as possible, for them to increase science returns, we should all be overjoyed that the science is seizing the day. This is from the Daily Mail last week. CERN to test world's most powerful particle accelerator during April's solar eclipse to search for invisible matter that secretly powers our universe. Okay, I guess. The world's largest and most powerful particle accelerator is set to smash protons together on April 8th to search for invisible particles secretly powering our universe. Now, that is the most retarded sentence that has ever existed in the history of humanity. Thank goodness this is the Daily Mail, and I actually was correcting the language there. This is almost definitely written by an AI. Theories have suggested there are 17 different particle groups, and the European Organization for Nuclear Research, better known as CERN, confirmed the existence of one using its Large Hadron Collider in 2012. So they think there are all of these invisible particles, and they found one of them. Now the team has restarted the Large Hadron Collider with hopes of unraveling more mysteries of the universe, specifically dark matter. Scientists began preliminary tests by sending billions of protons around the LHC's ring of superconducting magnets to boost their energy and ensure the $4 billion machine was in working condition. Wait a second. This machine is $4 billion? They're spending $4.6 billion just to study what it might take to create a dune buggy that can drive on the moon. But hey, listen, guys, I have no idea how science works. I am scientifically ignorant. These people are the experts. I am a mere conspiracy theorist stuck here on Earth, basking in my own ignorance, while the scientists are running around in space telling us what railroads do. And next month, CERN will shoot them down a 17-mile-long tunnel at nearly the speed of light to recreate conditions a second after the Big Bang. You know, the Big Bang, the thing that created the universe and everything in it 14 billion years ago. That's right. The science knows what happened 14 billion years ago. How did they figure it out? Math. Don't you get it? They just manipulated numbers for a while and figured out this entire universe came from the Big Bang, just boom, but much, much bigger. Nothing existed, and then everything existed. And right there, they were able to disprove the existence of God for all time, just using some math. You got some real genius theoretical physicists, you know, like that guy J. Robert Oppenheimer, and you got them in a room to do some science together, and they came up with the answer. There is no God. There was a Big Bang. Hey, guys, when did that Big Bang happen? Is there any way you can, like, show us that whole thing? And they're like, no, of course not. That was 14.3 billion years ago. That was way before dinosaurs ever even walked on the Earth. And thank goodness they did, because without dinosaur juice, we wouldn't be able to drive to Walmart, much less operate a dune buggy on the moon. The LHC will continue the experiment until later this year, when it will then be put under a long hibernation for CERN to transform it into the next version, the High Luminosity LHC. That sounds much better, by the way. The accelerator sits 300 feet underground at the border of France and Switzerland and first went live on September 10th, 2008. By golly, isn't that just 1 week before the collapse of Bear Stearns, the climax of the 2008 financial crisis? And wait a second, why are they telling us that it's at the border of France and Switzerland, but not that it's in Geneva? Geneva, by the way, is the location of not only CERN, but the International Labor Organization, the International Committee of the Red Cross, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, the World Meteorological Organization, the World Trade Organization, the International Telecommunication Union, the World Health Organization, and the World Intellectual Property Organization. And oh yeah, they got the World Economic Forum there too. So yep, it's basically one of the centers of the global empire. Thank goodness that's where they're going to locate the God particle. It's a good thing they're getting that system going on April 8th, the same day that we have the total solar eclipse, because the science says you got to figure out what's going to happen if both of these things are on at the same time. And if something does happen, then we're going to be like, oh, it was those two things happening at the same time. So if we get aliens, if we get the full Project Blue Beam event next week, everybody's going to be like, yep, those are aliens. We had the total solar eclipse and we had the CERN thing at the same time. They have clearly opened up a portal to another dimension. The aliens have come here and now we are in an existential crisis and we have to do whatever they say or else we are all going to be annihilated and we'll have no one to blame but ourselves. But wait, wait, wait. Don't worry. Don't worry. Don't worry. USA Today. Today. No, CERN won't open a portal during the April 8th eclipse. That'd be impossible. Oh my God, it's unbelievable. Sometimes I just cannot believe that we are on this timeline. This is absolute nonsense. And the woman who wrote this, her name is Gabrielle Settles. I'm sure she's a very nice person, if not just an AI, but just looks like a totally normal lady in maybe her late 20s or early 30s. She is a writer for the USA Today. And she is presenting herself as having done an authoritative study on whether or not CERN is going to open an interdimensional portal during the total solar eclipse. We are expected to believe this. The claim: CERN will start up April 8th to open a portal during the eclipse. An April 1st Facebook post shows a man telling viewers about his visit to the European Organization for Nuclear Research, or CERN, and what he thinks the organization will do on April 8th. They're going to open up and start using CERN and testing it the day of the eclipse. Here's what I think is going on. They, the powers that be, are opening up CERN in coordination with the eclipse to open up a gateway, a portal. The post was shared more than 1,000 times in 4 days. I've had posts shared that many times in 4 hours, and I'm not bragging. That's not even a big number. It's certainly not some sort of viral phenomenon that requires fact checks. Our rating, false. The post is wrong about both the timing and nature of CERN's work. CERN's equipment began operating in March, a month before the eclipse, and the technology is nowhere near strong enough to open a portal or a black hole. What? CERN's collider was restarted in March after a winter break. That's all it is, you see. CERN was hibernating for the winter. It's especially cold, 300 feet below ground. That's right, the wintry weather there up on the surface changes the temperature in an enclosed environment 300 feet below ground. Oh, I know there's probably a great scientific explanation for why it needs a winter break. On April 8th, people across 13 states will see a total solar eclipse when the moon passes directly between Earth and the sun. But CERN's technology has nothing to do with the astronomical phenomenon. Yeah, you see, it's just a coincidence that CERN is kicking into high gear at the exact same time. CERN uses its Large Hadron Collider to study matter and is responsible for finding the Higgs boson particle, or God particle. Scientists say the finding helps explain the Big Bang theory and how the universe was formed. Sophie Tesori, a spokesman for CERN, told USA Today there's no link between what CERN does and the upcoming eclipse. What we do at CERN is doing particle physics with accelerators such as the Large Hadron Collider, and this has little to do with astrophysics in a direct way, Tesori said. Well, case closed. And CERN couldn't create a portal even if it wanted to. Dejan Stojakovic, a physics professor at the University of Buffalo, previously told USA Today. See, they've been through this before. To create a black hole or wormhole, even microscopic ones, we need our current technology in the context of our standard theories of gravity. We need an accelerator as big as the whole universe, Stojakovic said. So there is no chance whatsoever to create such a portal at the Large Hadron Collider. And there you have it. Based on the context of our standard theories of gravity, they would need a CERN as large as the whole universe. And that doesn't even make sense. But what does he mean, the context of our standard theories of gravity? I don't know. I'm not smart enough. I'm not a scientist. But that's not all the debunking USA Today has done. They also want us to know that NASA rockets launched during the eclipse are to study the atmosphere and not part of a sex magic ritual. USA Today has debunked other false eclipse claims, including assertions that the rockets NASA will launch during the event are part of a sex magic ritual, that the eclipse is manufactured, and that it will cause days of darkness. Gosh, I hope they're right about all of this. I mean, we wouldn't want the science to be wrong. It's already so hard to believe to begin with. But we are expected to believe this. Now, hey, I hope you have a good weekend. If you like eclipses and you're going to go look at the eclipse, I hope you have a wonderful time. I'm not, because I simply don't care at all. But I totally accept that other people do. And if you're taking some kids for an unusual experience, they are going to be wowed in amazement. And that is a wonderful experience to have as a child. And while, yes, it could totally backfire if it turns out that the science has just been lying about the space for all of this time, but they wouldn't do that. And if you think so, you're a conspiracy theorist. I'll be back Monday at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic, and Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/imyourmoderator. And I'll see you soon, out on the range.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'mYourModerator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at I'mYourModerator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'mYourModerator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon down on the range.
It's hell!